Okay, welcome back. Hour number two on Friday night. There is a lot going on, to put it mildly, and I mean from many different disciplines, not just one or two. I'm going to start off tonight with an airplane story. We have some airplane recordings of very interesting conversations between pilots and the ATCs, which we're going to play a couple of those as well. Let's see. I've got this one. This is a whopper. We don't know exactly what caused this, but when I read it, maybe you'll come up with your own ideas. Are you there, young lady?
I'm here, Jeff.
You're right there in my left ear, as usual. All right. Yes. Here's a story. This is called, unusually, it's called The Flight from Hell. I'm just going to read it. I'm not going to read the headline. Horrified air passengers screamed and were left traumatized yesterday when a German husband began coughing up what was described as liters of blood in front of his wife while they were flying on a Lufthansa flight from Thailand to Germany before the fellow collapsed and died in mid-flight. The 63-year-old traveler, who has not been named, was said to have boarded the Lufthansa flight from Bangkok to Munich visibly ill before his condition rapidly deteriorated. "It was absolute horror. Everyone was screaming," said fellow passenger Martin something from Switzerland. And the guy had something. What did he have? We don't know. But we do know that many things similar to this have been reported by people who have been injected. Nosebleeds, blood, you name it. The man who was traveling with his wife got on with cold sweats and was breathing much too quickly before passengers rushed to help him, offering chamomile tea and taking his pulse. But as the plane took off, his health went quickly downhill. The man was said to have been spitting into a bag that his wife provided for him when a gush of blood came out of his mouth and nose, splattering the walls of the Airbus A380 aircraft. People were screaming everywhere. The man's wife had initially told the cabin crew that her husband was simply feeling a little bit unwell because they had to run to catch the flight. A flight attendant then reacted and asked him if he was okay. "She was very worried," said Martin's seatmate in front of him. But when the German man was given the green light to stay on board, Karen intervened and told the cabin crew a doctor was urgently needed. Now, Karen was sitting also in front of this guy. The pilot arrived, called for a doctor. The doctor was a Polish medic who said he's fine, but he wasn't fine. They gave him some more tea. The plane took off, and then the gush of blood began just pouring. The guy was just projectile vomiting blood. Anyway, he died on the plane, and people will never forget that flight. The plane turned around and landed in Thailand to take his body off and whatever. So these things are happening all over the place now as more and more vax-related, bioweapon-related injuries are beginning to become more than obvious. It's just not something you can hide. It's crazy out there. And we have a lot of airplane incidents now. They're going on all over the place. You're not hearing about them. I can tell you that for sure. They're happening.
Oh, yeah, they're being concealed at the moment.
A lot of things are being concealed at the moment, for sure. It's really crazy. Now, let me find this. All right, this one, terrifying. I have to find the second one. This is the plane in a rapid descent. All right, here's the actual recording, again, between the pilot, and I believe this guy's an Aussie. He's an Australian pilot. I think this is the Qantas one, and he's talking. His accent is a little bit strong, but you'll get it. But these things are done and contained in the cockpit. The passengers don't know what's going on, and most of the time they never find out. All right, here we go.
1-73-35, roger, pan.
Mayday, mayday, mayday. 1-73-35, we're in emergency descent. We've had a hot traffic issue, and we're descending, and we need emergency down to lower safe. We need to depressurize the aircraft.
1-73-35, center, roger, mayday, 10-1-0-1000.
We just tried to get down to 10,000. We're both feeling unwell, and we have oxygen at the moment. We'll get back to you.
The pilots are on oxygen, all right? The plane's going down, and nobody in the back knows. He says, I'm on oxygen at the moment.
The aircraft is performing as expected. I'm okay. The SO is still on oxygen and is okay.
They made a safe landing. All right, so it's crazy. That happened, and I guarantee you nobody in the back knew. They just won't tell them. It wasn't like it was diving. It was descending, essentially in control. But you just wonder how many things like this happened. Hard to know. Okay, I'm looking for the other one here. I'll find it. All of you out there who fly... I wonder how much concern there is among traveling passengers anymore. There should be a lot, especially when you see the airlines begin to talk about DEI hiring and how they're going to kind of ignore the basic rules of advancement to bring on the minority groups and put them in the cockpit sooner.
Yeah, that's being encouraged, if not promoted, through financial incentives.
Just nutty. Nutty, nutty, nutty. Okay, here's one. Did we ever play, did we play the one with baggage on fire?
No.
Let's try this one. I don't...
Okay.
Just for kicks. I'm going to have to... Hold on, I got to reload it. Right... Here we go.
Airborne. Okay, Big Short 300, if you can maintain 8,000, or if you need to climb above 8, you can. But go ahead and declare emergency for you guys and encrypt at Las Vegas Airport via radar vectors. Do you guys need anything from me? Do you guys need a hold, or are you guys ready to come back now? When you're able to sort of maintain 6,500 and turn left heading of 2030. Make sure 300. When you're able and need the fuel remaining and the number of passengers.
4 hours, fuel 19 sold. Make sure 30.
All right, thanks. Make sure 300 airport is 9 o'clock and 3 miles. Advise.
We have the airport, so make sure 300.
Make sure 300. Clear visual approach, runway 19 left.
Clear for the visual 19 left. Make sure 300.
Make sure 300. Contact tower 118.75.
Okay, there's another one. I can't find that other one. I'm sorry.
The other one was multiple failures mid-flight.
Oh, I had that. I had it. I thought that was
flight drama.
The lady pilot?
No.
Okay. Hold on, I just saw it.
You want me to send it to you again?
I got it. Multiple failures mid-flight. I got it. Now, the really, I think the comforting thing about these kind of real-life events is how incredibly cool and professional the air traffic controllers are. They're remarkable people. That's awfully difficult work. And to try to talk to a pilot, a co-pilot in a crisis situation and keep your cool is quite a demonstration of remarkable professionalism. All right, here, multiple failures mid-flight. Now, I only heard this once. Let's see it again. And all right, turn this over here. All right, here we go.
We've got 93 people on board. Currently, we've lost most of our flaps, and we've lost our autopilots.
Did all of you hear that? Well, we've got 93 people on board. We've lost most of our flaps. And if any of you know anything about aviation, that's... All right, here we go.
And we've lost... Stand by. Okay, we'll take runway 5. We've got it all sorted out. We can take a 180-degree turn for a downwind to join base at this time.
Okay, 1174, turn left heading 250. This will be your downwind for runway 5. And when you get a chance, your fuel on board.
We checked downwind now, heading 250, and currently we've got 3,000 kilograms of fuel.
Why did he ask, or she ask, about fuel? Because if they hit hard and the thing lights off, they're trying to judge the amount of damage is going to be done to the whole surrounding area and the plane. They need to know that. This is very interesting.
74, Toronto, good morning. The vehicles are standing by. Wind 130 at 5 knots. Expect the wind shift to go to a crosswind at about 300 feet. Clear to land, runway 05.
Land, runway 05, air 1011, 74.
I'm trying to figure out how they're going to land if they got no flaps. How is the plane going to stop?
You're going to need a really long runway. I don't know.
All right. It's still flying. Now the sound is on, but there's nothing here.
We got 93 people.
All right. We're going to do this again, just because it's so you. It went silent at the end there. That was them. They were talking. Here we go.
Four again. We got 93 people on board. Currently, we've lost most of our flaps, and we've lost our autopilots, and we've lost standby. Okay, we'll take runway 5. We've got it all sorted out. We can take a 180-degree turn for a downwind to join base at this time.
Okay, 1174, turn left heading 250. This will be your downwind for runway 5, and when you get a chance, your fuel on board.
We checked downwind now, heading 250, and currently we've got 3,000 kilograms of fuel.
1174, Toronto, good morning. The vehicles are standing by. Wind 130 at 5 knots. Expect the wind shift to go to a crosswind at about 300 feet. Clear to land, runway 05.
Land, runway 05, air 1011, 74.
Okay, and that's the end of the audio. It's still running, but we'll assume they made it. They lost most of their flaps. They lost the autopilots. I don't know. Like I say, a lot of this going on, and nobody in the back is necessarily ever the wiser. Pretty interesting.
So there was a post on Twitter today under the account of, Matt Walsh, who was covering some... an FAA, I guess it was some kind of a conference of a meeting of some sort.
Right.
But anyway, the gist of it is, he says, I've obtained internal footage of senior officials at the FAA's Flight Program Operations Division, which is responsible for all aspects of aircraft operations, workshopping a plan to reduce the number of white males in aviation. The footage begins with FAA Acting Deputy Chief Operating Officer Angela McCullough saying more workers need to go from, quote, ramp to cockpit, meaning she wants to see more baggage handlers become airline pilots.
Yeah, get them right up in the cockpit, folks. Just no more baggage for them. Unbelievable. It's incredible to even hear this.
Yeah.
Read some more. Is there any more? That's disgusting.
A couple more. As the meeting goes on, McCullough declares that it's important to, quote, get a little uncomfortable. She complains that flight operations is, quote, white male dominated, and tells the managers they need to, quote, talk about what the future could look like.
Unreal. This is truly science fiction time. Crazy. Here's one more aircraft story for you. Aircraft enters restricted airspace. So somebody flying a Cessna flew into a no-fly zone over Omaha, Nebraska, which is where the Strategic Air Command is headquartered, if I remember correctly. Here we go. And watch how quickly the defensive perimeter was thrown up. Oh. Oh, my favorite video. Sorry, we're having trouble playing this video. Learn more. So they took it down. I guess it was sensitive somehow, but they won't let us hear it. I'll try it one more time. Oh, it might work.
Guard aircraft intercepted by an F-15 armed air defense fighter. You have been intercepted. Warp north immediately. You have entered restricted airspace. Rock your wings and acknowledge it and warp north. First guard call negative contact. Please give the server wing off. Off reach for another attempt.
Big for copy.
White and blue, Cessna 150 or 152, that has been intercepted by a F-15. Work north immediately.
Omaha 5-1, we've got the POI on camera. Omaha 5-1, Big Blitz, you get a tail number? Negative, we're too far out. If we can get closer, we can get one.
That's the F-15 pilot.
Bigfoot, continue inspect. We'll do a handoff with Omaha 62. That's where Bigfoot, we have a possible.
I've got to be a little bit curious on this. Where in God's name are you going?
Guard aircraft intercepted by an F-15 armed air defense.
Somebody said, where in God's name are you going? I mean, any pilot flying in any large urban area will know if there's a restricted air corridor or space. But this individual went right on in and got quickly greeted by an armed and ready-to-fire set of missiles, or four of them, on an F-15. So, fun stuff.
Well, I think, you know, it's a matter of time.
It's just a matter of time. You got it. I mean, I'll tell you, if I were flying, I don't fly. But and I saw pilots of questionable appearance, I'd probably not fly. I'd probably just turn around and go back.
Oh, you know, there's the pilots, there's the ground crew, there's the air traffic controllers.
Let's not even mention the maintenance crew, for God's sake.
Right.
What they could do.
I mean, all of these people are going to be allowed to have these jobs, whether they're qualified or not.
Maybe the less qualification, the quicker they're going to get these jobs, too. Seriously, I don't understand any of it. The thinking now, this whole woke culture is crazy. I don't know if I mentioned it last night, but Disney lost, what did they lose last year in some of these woke films? They had a string of bombs. I think they lost, it was in the billions, I think. Several billion, anyway, a lot. They're talking now about bringing back Pirates of the Caribbean. Never mind that Johnny Depp has been completely vindicated and cleared of the charges leveled at him by Amber Heard, his former squeeze, in court. He's cleared. Did Disney hire him right back and keep the franchise going? No. They're going to reboot the franchise with a woke set of actors. All female crew on this pirate ship, and a female Johnny Depp, the character. A black female Johnny Depp. So another bomb coming. They're going to keep losing. And I guess it's what they want. I can't imagine the shareholders being happy about this. But that's their plan. Johnny Depp is available. America loved those movies, as most of you know. And we need a little entertainment now. But no, they're going to put a black female in the role and turn the crew into all dykes. Or whatever.
No, good luck. You know, I don't think that's appealing to what's left of Americans. It's not what I'm seeing.
No, it isn't. I completely agree. Now, let me find our next one. And that's... we want to talk a little bit more about CJD. This prion thing is huge. We can't overstate it. And it may be the end of the line for all who are fighting multiple symptoms from these shots and the virus. It may be prions, and the brain may be the ultimate final target in the body. We don't know, but it's beginning to look that may be something that should be kept firmly on the table. So where do we want to go first with this?
Let's just clarify that you know, the prions, there is a prion, a distinct prion protein that can misfold, and that when that happens, it results in what's known as this spongiform encephalopathy, otherwise known as CJD, Creutzfeldt-Jakob disease. But, you know, amyloids can cause, amyloids being these misfolded proteins that aggregate and form fibrils, can wind up or occur in many different organs and tissues, the heart, the kidneys, the brain in forms other than prion. We have, you know, ALS would be a protein misfolding disease, Parkinson's, Lewy body dementia. And then they're also occurring in the gastrointestinal tract. And if you've noticed, a lot of these people who have received the injections and even the infection itself are having a lot of problems with their intestinal tract. And it may be the overgrowth of bad bacteria, a lack of good bacteria, but also it may be the deposition of amyloid fibrils in the gastrointestinal tract.
Mm-hmm.
And oftentimes the first symptom of that is anemia, iron deficiency anemia. So,
I used to hear that as a kid, commercials. Do you have iron deficiency anemia?
Poor blood.
And they used to have an iron product. I can't remember the name of it.
Yeah, Geritol.
Good for you.
Geritol.
You're not old enough to remember Geritol.
Yeah.
Come on, you got your 20th birthday coming up. You're too young. Sorry.
Right.
No. Okay, deadly prion diseases are rising in the U.S., and we aren't exactly sure why, but that's not we, us. That's what the editorial says here, and we know just about precisely what's causing much of it. Go ahead.
Well, this particular article came out, I think, in December, and I think the big pharma, or the powers that be, are now having to address this noticeable increase in cases of CJD, specifically CJD,
right.
Which used to be extremely rare. And so they're putting a spin on it that, these cases have been increasing over the past decade anyway. And so this is just a continuing of the trend that was already occurring before the pandemic. And in one of these CJD groups, there was a thread of people taking issue with that, and they've had firsthand experiences that people they know, sometimes more than one in two or three in a confined area, regional area, have been diagnosed with CJD. And prior to that, many of these hospitals had never even heard of it. They'd had no incidences of this ever. So I think they're going to spin it that I don't know where they're going to or how they're going to explain it, but it's definitely happening. And
it's growing. Now, when you are diagnosed, you begin to present with symptoms, you may have had CJD for 6, 7, 8, 9, 10 years. It's usually a long fused issue. But as it relates to the injections, the bioweapon injections, or potentially just the bioweapon virus itself, this time frame is greatly shortened. If you get prion disease, the chances of survival are almost zero. Forget it. 85% of the cases die within the first year after symptom onset. So when you're diagnosed and you're manifesting symptoms, you've got a year. That's about it. Prion disease is universally...
18 months at the most.
Fair enough.
The unique thing about CJD is that, yes, it has a very, very long incubation period,
usually.
Years in some cases.
Yeah.
We don't know. These rapid onset CJD cases, we don't know. In these, you know, unfortunate people, whether or not they were developing CJD, they might have been harboring these misfolded proteins, and then the injection or the spike protein, however they were exposed to it, just accelerated everything. And it seems like it's very fast, and sometimes, you know, once the symptoms present, it tends to go rapidly. you know, weeks to, again, 18 months usually at the most.
We've called this
to death.
Yes, we've called this turbo CJD a couple times, and there's something to be said about that. It seems to be a very quick degeneration
of the
brain.
In that it happens almost immediately, you know, within days to weeks of having the vaccine. That's what's distinctive about some of these cases.
We had one story where the guy was diagnosed and he was dead in 4 weeks.
Some are even less. I think there was one that was 3 weeks.
I think you're right.
Or maybe even two. It was stunning, and those were in France.
I think it was a week. I think it was actually shorter than that. It was very, very short. So are people able to ignore their symptoms? Most people would. People don't want to run to the doctor necessarily, because I think when you begin to lose your faculties like this, it's not readily apparent to the person who's being degraded, but to those around them it would be. And human nature would be, you don't want to say anything to somebody. Say, gee, Mom,
well,
why are you walking
and
into
think,
the walls all the time now? It's not a joke. Why did you get lost on your walk around the block? Why do you need GPS to find your way home, Dad, from the store? These are going on, these things.
The problem, though, with CJD is you wouldn't initially suspect that. In somebody who's having cognitive issues, you would look for more obvious causes.
Right.
So there's a delay in diagnosis, you know, right there.
Okay,
and,
go ahead. We're running out of time here. I want to make sure we get to mention the test for Creutzfeldt-Jakob disease, CJD, using a nasal swab. This is out in the NIH paper.
Yeah, it is possible to test for CJD. I don't know that they're doing this routinely, but it is possible to take what they call a nasal brushing, where they use a brush swab and scrape the inside of the sinus cavity in the mucosa and collect a sample that can then be analyzed for the presence of the misfolded prion protein.
Right.
And that sample, at least according to this one paper, seems to render a better result, easier result than doing a spinal tap, where you would be looking for the misfolded protein in somebody's spinal fluid, and that requires a lumbar puncture, spinal tap.
Right. Not fun.
So that prion can be recovered from a nasal swab.
Now, that's very interesting for a number of reasons, which we won't get into too heavily here, but if there is a test where you can literally go in and have your nose swabbed, we like to honor Klaus Schwab. If you can get your nose swabbed and they can tell you, yes, you've got CJD, or you certainly have misfolded proteins presenting, that's going to become, a very popular test for several reasons. We'll see. But apparently it's the real deal. They can do it. There's a medical paper out on it, science paper. So.
Yeah, and it actually goes back a few years. I think it might have been 2009. So this is not new. They know they can do it. I haven't, in the comments that I've been reading from people's family members who are afflicted by this, they're still doing the spinal tap and combined with clinical features, whether they're having dementia, certain symptoms, and then an MRI. So if you can put those three together, then, you know, they may strongly suggest CJD. And there are marker proteins that they look for in the spinal fluid.
Yeah, don't forget again, this is really important. Your body makes prion proteins. They're there. They're harmless. I think people don't even know exactly what they're for. But those are targeted by one of the sequences on the outside of the spike protein. And when they meet up with one of your body's endogenous prion proteins, and that protein gets flipped into a misfolded format, it'll go to the brain and start to degrade the brain. That's one of the big problems with a spike. one of them, one of dozens, but that's bad news. Now, it can also lead to a prion protein that's been misfolded, and other proteins as well can be misfolded by the spike, but they'll cause a cascade effect. When they run into subsequent normal proteins, they can cause them to misfold as well. So you've got a cascade beginning to build of protein misfolding in your body, and those proteins can end up in your brain very easily. They go right through the blood-brain barrier, and you are on your way to severe cognitive decline. That's how it begins.
Well, and don't, it's not just the brain, though. It's
No.
Kidneys are affected. Like I said, gastrointestinal tract.
Major organs.
I mean, these
all of them.
Aggregated proteins can really muck up the functioning of an organ. I've got a short reader here. This is a 12-year-old boy that was just diagnosed with amyloidosis.
Wow.
I mean, this is unheard of in children, or at least until the past couple of years it was.
No, it's called bioweapon-induced catastrophe at the human body, no matter what age. Go ahead.
This person says, I just received news, or I just received my 12-year-old son's biopsy results from the Mayo Clinic, and they said he has AA amyloidosis. AA is serum A amyloidosis. Now what? I'm literally freaking out and cannot breathe. Update. Now I am being told they misunderstood the results, and he actually has lambda amyloidosis. That's another form called light chain, which originates in the bone marrow. And has to do with the immune globulins that your bone marrow manufactures for your immune cells. So this is not good. Let's see. The woman that runs this group, I really have to tip my hat to her. She is so well-versed on this topic. This is an amyloidosis group.
Got it.
Well, here's one comment to that. This is a older man. I'm recovering from surgery, and I misread AA as AL. It's a life-changing diagnosis, not a death sentence. I saw a post in support of patient 30 years past illness. AL amyloidosis creates light chain proteins instead of a white cell. These light chains collect in different organs, causing damage. I have cardiac AL amyloidosis, and it wasn't caught till late. So I have congestive heart failure, stage 4. My amyloidosis and myeloma have been in remission since April 2022. Trust that God will guide you through it all. And she asked, but this is different from AA amyloidosis, correct? Correct. AL and AA are different in how they are diagnosed and completely different in how they are treated. AA also rarely impacts the heart. Let's see, and the last one here, And here's the moderator, our admin of the group. Please call Boston University back now that you know which type it is. The only way to treat AA is to treat the underlying disease. Well, okay, it's not AA, in which case is going to need to be identified. So when it's serum A, amyloidosis AA, it usually means there's some kind of infection present. Or extreme inflammation, and of course we all know the spike protein on its own is capable of doing that. Dr. Karen Libby is the rheumatologist at BU who specializes in AA. If she is not allowed to see your son because of his age, she may know a pediatric rheumatologist who could see him. She has spoken at rheumatology conferences about amyloidosis and would have the best idea of amyloid-savvy doctors in your area. If you don't get any answers from the BU office, please let me know, and I will email my contacts there. And one other comment. Oh, my God. I have never heard of a child having this. Is this for sure? I would imagine this would make a child eligible for care from any one of the centers of excellence. My heart goes out to you. I hope your family receives the best possible diagnostic and treatment care available.
Right. Well, when 12
years old.
Hit with this stuff, and we all know it's intentional, it's their targets, is very, very sickening to even hear.
So the treatment, amyloid, just for the record, for that AL, the one that originates in the bone marrow, is essentially chemotherapy. Because it's considered a precancerous.
A 12-year-old kid dosing him up with sickening, horrible.
Yeah.
Childhood destroyed, life destroyed. We're going to move right along now. Amyloid. Amyloid clots. You've all seen pictures of them by now. They're being called calamari. They're white. They grow actually to fit the size of the blood vein or artery that they are found in. They don't just grow along at one side of it. They'll expand and fill the entire space 360 degrees if you're looking down an artery. They'll fill it until that artery is shut down, and then the person drops over dead. Dr. John Campbell had John O'Looney on, the mortician, undertaker from the UK, one of our very favorite people. This is a little segment he did with John Campbell, and it has to do with amyloid clots, the white clots. They may come out red, but if you wash them off, they are white. They are like hard, rubberized plastic. They stretch. They don't break. What's causing these is crazy. Part of the story from the mainstream media a couple of months ago was that, gee, these clots were actually formed in the body after the person died.
That was floated out there, yes.
Absolutely a ridiculous lie. Completely fabricated, total fiction. Not true. When the body dies, it stops producing and building things like that. There may be some changing, of course, as the body begins to decay, but that's not like building an amyloid clot that shuts down a vein or an artery. You die, and you die with what you have already in your circulatory system. Now, here's John O'Looney talking about government policy forced very vigorously in the UK about these clots. So hang on.
When we've gone to put the embalming nozzle down the artery to pump fluid into that limb, it's obstructed. It's obstructed by a blockage. And my embalmer has called me, and I've gone over and had a look. He's removed this lock, and as he's pulled it out with tweezers, the clot has come out the full length of this young man's leg.
Yeah.
The full length, nearly 3 feet long. It initially appears to be very similar to a normal clot, but then when you wash them off and you wash the blood off, they're bright white.
Yeah.
And if you don't get all of the blood off, once you place them in formalin, the formalin will burn that blood and they go black. So if you wash them right off properly, they stay bright white. They're not normal. They're not usual. And so we did this, and I emailed my local coroner and kind of said, you know, we've had this young guy in. I know you've looked at him because he's had a post-mortem. I'm really concerned because we're seeing a really strange clots inside him that we haven't seen before. And I sent an email because I wanted the paper trail, John. Yeah. And usually with my coroner, they're very good. They'll get back to me within the hour I send an email, sometimes less. Didn't get a reply. So 3 or 4 days later, I received a phone call, and it was from one of the girls in the office who said she spoke to the pathologist. The pathologist wasn't concerned, asked me to dispose of the samples, and actually suggested that it grows inside people regularly post-mortem.
But you know it doesn't. You know it doesn't.
Of course, I worked for the coroner for 7 years. Now, to expect me to believe that when you die, rubber fills your arteries is ridiculous. It's fantasy, and I actually felt quite
insulting.
I felt quite insulted that they would think that I was that stupid. And that was where we left it. And subsequent emails that I've wrote voicing concerns have been totally ignored.
And so they asked you to dispose of the evidence.
And so I wrote to the Chief Coroner of England, because I'm not talking about one death now, I'm talking about dozens. Raising concerns.
Dozens of people that have died suddenly, and find these white rubbery things circulation.
That shouldn't be there. I mean, I've got a BIE registered embalmer. He's done 22 years. He says exactly the same. And it's very interesting that the BIE have openly threatened...
It's the British Embalming Association.
Yes, they've openly threatened their members with disciplinary action if they raise any concerns, which actually breaks one of their oaths. Oath number 4 is that they will voice concerns if there are any. They're not doing that. They're hiding it totally and actually intimidating their members. So they have a bi-monthly magazine that's released to all of the BIE members, and they've openly mentioned me as a funeral director, warned them not to speak to me, and say if there's any confirmed concerns, they go directly to the lady who runs it and not to speak out to anyone. Why would you do that? Surely if you see something inside someone that it shouldn't be there, and you should voice those concerns. You know, as a funeral director, certainly for me, I have two reasons that I would voice concerns. Let me explain. If I go to the hospital, John, and I pick someone up and I bring them back to my place and I roll them over on a tray and they've got a knife sticking out their back or a puncture wound, I have a moral obligation as a decent human to raise that concern. Yeah. I also have a legal obligation to raise that concern. Yeah. We're raising these concerns. Nobody is listening. And when I emailed the Chief Coroner of England, I CC'd in around 15 or 20 very eminent people that included Professor Dolores Cale, Dr. Tess Laurie, Dr. Stephen Frost, and others, and I didn't get a reply. So I emailed again and said, look, what are you doing about all of these deaths that we're seeing? This isn't right. And I got a four-word response from his secretary, and it said, we follow government policy. It was kind of the most revealing answer they could have given, an admission without actually admitting anything. So basically, they follow government policy. Now, government policy is this. If you die from a thrombosis, it could be a jelly bean in your artery. It could be sawdust. It all comes under the same umbrella term of a thrombosis, a blockage, a thrombolytic blockage. They won't dig any further than that. And the reason for that is government policy.
And tyrannical government policy at that. Now, we've been on to this amyloid clot thing for a couple of years at least, and it was obvious from the beginning that this was related to either the bioweapon SARS-CoV-2 virus or the injections, or both. And now, John O'Looney was one of the first to talk about this as well, and now apparently they are just exploding in frequency, and he's seeing them all the time.
Well, I think the number he gave, and it lines up with, who was the guy that was just interviewed that did a survey of embalmers, the ones that were kind enough to respond. I think right. They're seeing it in about 20 to 25% of the bodies. So it's not all of them.
No, but it's huge, and this was not even around 4 years ago, remember.
Right, right. That's the defining feature, is that prior to 2021, they did not see clots like this.
No. And these clots are not dissolvable with any kind of medication. No pharmaceutical cures for this. You have to go in and physically remove them. And nobody knows how many places in the body these things are growing and shutting down and restricting blood flow for openers. Now, add to that the injected have sludge blood. That's what we call it anyway. So you've got a restricted plumbing system, and you have sludge blood that your heart has to try to push through these restricted openings, which are on the way to closing, given enough time. And you wonder why the heart just gives up. You don't wonder for long. You figure it out. The heart can't do this. It's too difficult. Heart wasn't designed to do that.
That's right.
Here's another little quick clip. Go ahead.
Yeah, go ahead. Go ahead.
I'm going to play one more clip from John, just a little shorter
okay.
here.
Right. Let me tell you, nothing carries on growing inside your body when you die. Nothing.
Right. Right.
With the exception of perhaps decomposition, you know, as your body begins
right.
to break down. There's no way on earth these clots form. I would have seen them. I've done 18 years. 7 years of that, I worked for the coroner. I've got a BIE registered embalmer.
Yeah.
I have had maybe 60, 70 other funeral directors reach out to me. They've even tapped me on the shoulder at the local crematorium and thanked me for raising the alarm.
60 or 70?
Yes. Yeah.
Other funeral
yes,
directors?
Yeah, within the industry.
I've seen the same thing.
Mortuary managers. I've had mortuary managers that tell me the thrombosis deaths have gone up 600%.
600%. Thrombosis, meaning a closure or a clotting of a vein or an artery. And again, these things don't just grow in one They can grow in as many as they seem to get going in. So it's a process. This is an end-of-the-line technique of this bioweapon. That's just one way that it will kill you. Sludge blood alone will shorten the length of your heart and its utility as a pumping organ in your body. Just that alone. Sludge blood, then you start to restrict the plumbing, and the pressure goes through the roof, and the heart can't take it. Then we have all the other issues of heart damage caused by the spike and your T lymphocytes that go into the heart to go after the cells that have been either killed or are in a stasis format, get them out of there. This is all so insane and so diverse in the numbers of ways that this bioweapon and the virus and the spike can kill and is killing right now.
Yeah, that's right. And I believe there's some discussion now as to whether the lipid nanoparticles and the polyethylene glycol, that mixture that's in the Pfizer and the Moderna as the delivery system, are contributing to the formation of these things. It's very plausible, so that needs to be taken into account.
There's no way to stop these once they begin growing. No. Oh, my God, toxic, yeah. Look, this is a genocidal bioweapon. All right, let's just for fun, 30 major and medium, if not minor, ways that this injection, this weapon can kill? We can't track them all. There's too many. Too many pathways of death from this thing.
And don't forget, they've now abandoned the adenoviral vector platform in favor of this mRNA using lipid nanoparticles. And
that's right.
So it's not going to matter what's inside that lipid nanoparticle if it's, you know, they form these types of amyloid clots.
Speaking of airplanes, we had a private jet try to make a landing on a freeway in Florida today. With fatal consequences. So
yeah, that was
what caused
a fireball.
That? Yeah, what caused that? We don't know. Don't know. So the friendly skies are not so friendly anymore. And according to what Erica just read, they're going to be promoting people into the left or right seats of the airplanes who shouldn't be there. And a lot of these pilots have been ejected and they're still flying. We're way overdue for a major crash, I'd say.
I think there have been, you know, many, many near misses, let's say.
We don't hear about them. You bet.
Right.
Sure. No, just like those recordings. The people in the back never knew that the captain was on the phone to ATC saying, "We've lost our flaps, we've lost our autopilots." I mean, good Lord. And they never knew.
Oh, gosh.
And then the guy blasting blood all over the inside of the aircraft. You can bet that it was tied in somehow. It probably got injected in Germany a couple of years ago, and he had some kind of a major break. There's so many things that this horrible weapon can manifest in the body. So many different symptoms. So many different pathways of damage. It's crazy. And the average doctor, there's no way they can deal with this.
Well, the crazy thing is that a lot of people are you know, appearing, at least on the exterior, to be okay.
I see them every day.
That they can be walking around and having this degree of clotting.
It's nutty. We have a couple minutes here. Do you have a couple readers we should do here?
No, let's see. Yeah, how about CJD from the bioweapon?
That was my choice. See?
Oh, good.
I finally got her to choose. All right. Go ahead.
Has anyone heard or found any confirmation that CJD can lay dormant in a person and that stress can cause it to become active? My partner was only 48 and under a great deal of stress when she developed symptoms. First answer, so sorry to hear this. A genuine question. Had she been COVID vaccinated shortly prior to displaying symptoms? A close relative was a similar age to your partner and showed signs very shortly after receiving a vaccination. The actual diagnosis followed about 7 months later. And someone chimes in, yes. My husband had his jab on the Saturday. By Monday, he was starting to feel off color, like he had vertigo. So that's 3 days. Sadly, things rapidly declined, and he died within a couple months. He was perfectly fine until he had that jab. I told all the doctors this. You can't prove it, though, can you?
No. Next, a significantly higher proportion of CJD cases, 65%, experienced stressful events that occurred less than 6 months before clinical diagnosis. While in the non-CJD patients group, only 32% of them experienced such events within half a year before the disease was diagnosed and officially was in an onset. The role of stress and anxiety in the onset of familial Creutzfeldt-Jakob disease, another couple notes on that subject. Stress is a trigger for many things, heart, cancer, autoimmune, flare-ups. So it stands to reason if you are under great stress, this could trigger. However, there are people with zero stress who have it. And one last comment. My mom was in a traumatic car accident in May. Toward the end of her recovery, her CJD symptoms began appearing. She was not officially diagnosed until a few weeks later. Prior to the car accident, my mom had been experiencing daily lightheadedness for over a year and a half. She went to every possible doctor, and no one could give her an explanation for her symptoms. I truly believe that the car accident awoke and sped up her CJD diagnosis in her body. So a lot of factors here. It can lurk. Go ahead.
The next couple pertain to people who did get the vax. My sister was the same. She was 50, had the vaccine, and was diagnosed with CJD in May and passed
there
in October.
Yeah.
Absolutely devastated. She was a fitness instructor. The clinic contacted me before Christmas asking me if Mel had any fertility treatment, which she hadn't, but had seen something on Twitter that said the vaccine had triggered prion disease. He said it was untrue. I'm still not convinced.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, all the explanations.
Right.
Another person says, sorry for your loss. My twin brother passed away of CJD at 56, a year and a half ago, died within a month after diagnosis. He did take the jab. Also, my younger brother passed away at 55 last year. He took the jab. And my older sister, 59, is not doing well, probably only months to live. She, too, took the jab. I didn't take the jab, and I am fine. I told them before vaccine rollout, don't listen to the government. You don't know what's in the vaccine. Last one, my dad had gotten the latest vaccine in 2022, and just a week or two later, he started getting symptoms. Only made it about 6 weeks.
Wow.
So, yeah, it is happening.
And remember, the stories we read are not even measurable compared to how many are out there. So,
yeah, tip of the iceberg.
Take it for what it's worth. Make your own decisions. Okay, we've got to run. Thank you. Great job. A lot of material tonight. We hope you all enjoyed it, certainly learned from it, and do share these programs. Talk to you soon,
okay.
Young lady.
Thank you, Jeff. Okay,
alrighty.
Good night, everyone.
Be right back with Hour 3 right after this. Stay with us.